the land of the rising scrum on Off the Ball.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to another episode of Land of the Rising Scrum here on Off the Ball with me, Neil Tracy, as we're working our way through the Rugby World Cup teams in anticipation of the 2019 Rugby World Cup, which is now just a few weeks away. Now, last week, we hit our 14th episode and our 14th and 15th teams because we brought you two episodes in one. Now we're on to our 16th team. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to look at Argentina, Georgia and Australia before the World Cup. But this week, we are going to look at a team that are about to take part in their fourth tournament after debuting in 1999 before going on in 2003 and then missing a couple of tournaments before returning in 2015. And they're back again for their fourth crack at it in 2019 in Japan. This is, of course, Uruguay. And joining me on the line is a Uruguayan former international who would be well known to Irish audiences. 76 caps for Uruguay, just recently retired from Test rugby, and a former Munster man as well, Mario Segario. Thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks to you for inviting me to the programme. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Mario. I suppose I'll just start because I mentioned there you're a former Uruguay international, and I think a few months ago a lot of people had been expecting that we were going to see you in Japan for Uruguay in the coming World Cup. But just a couple of months ago, you announced your retirement from Test rugby. You said it was for, I think in your statement, you said it was for personal reasons. Like, what was it that led you to step away from Test rugby?
Well, to be honest, I was expecting to join the team during the World Cup, but here in Uruguay, you know, the reality is different. Here we all players, we work, we study, and we have to play too. And as you may know, the intensity of a World Cup needs a lot of preparation, needs a lot of time. I couldn't get that time because of my work, you know. I rather prefer at the moment when I made the decision of coming back to Uruguay was to start converting myself from a professional sportsman to a business one, and I give priority to that, you know. So it was a tough decision to me to make it, but I decided to give a step back and leave the space to someone who could give the enough time to be prepared to the World Cup.
And how difficult a decision was it to step aside so close to a World Cup? Because as I say, you've played 76 times for your country across 13 years. You know, you've been on a long journey in professional rugby across France and indeed Ireland as well, and across Spain. And to have, you know, helped qualify your country for another World Cup, having played in one 4 years ago, did you just feel the time was right, I suppose?
Well, as you said, playing another qualifying for Uruguay, qualifying the country for the first time as early as we did, and had to make the decision of give a step away was very tough. I don't know if the timing was the perfect one, but it happened like that, and I couldn't change the reality. So it's a pity for me, but well, what can I do?
Yeah, and is this just the difficult situation that players from kind of tier two and tier three nations face before these tournaments? That, you know, you aren't just going at, you don't just have to concentrate on getting your game right and being ready to go for a World Cup. You have to factor in all the other small things in life as well, like your work and your family and in your case your studies.
Yeah, that's true. For example, for me during the preparing the qualifying for Uruguay, a normal day for me was from 7 a.m. to 9:30 training, from 9:30 till 6 p.m. working, and from 7 p.m. till 10 p.m. university. So you can imagine you can't hold that rhythm for too much long.
Yeah, certainly not. And it's something that you would have, I was reading up on you beforehand, you actually parked your studies when you first went into professional rugby and moved over to France. But I'll speak to you about that in a couple of minutes. I want to start, though, by asking, I suppose, about how you got into rugby initially, because obviously we know Uruguay is probably a football mad country, a soccer mad country, and rugby is probably a couple of pegs down the list of priorities for young kids, you know, growing up in Uruguay, what sport they're going to play. How did you get involved in it?
Well, to be honest, it's funny because I got involved into rugby through soccer, through the football. I used to live really close to my former club. And during summer, there were a soccer tournament for my age. I was 12 years old. And I always was bigger than my teammates. So I was playing there. And the pitch was divided in two. One half was soccer and the other half was rugby. And one of the coaches saw me player. I wasn't a very good soccer player, to be honest.
Well, we have you see it? We have a picture there of you up on the screen there, and you're juggling a rugby ball on your foot there. I think it's before one of the Rugby World Cup games in 2015. You don't look too bad at soccer.
Yeah. Well, in Uruguay, in the Uruguayan context, you have a lot of good players, and you really have to be good to get into a club.
And at what stage when you were playing rugby, did you realise that this was the sport for you and that you really had a feel for it?
To be honest, from the first training, I knew it was a good sport for me. You know, I was invited by the coaches to join the team that very week. And I went to watch a game, and they borrowed me a pair of shorts and boots to start playing. And I didn't, I never played rugby. And since that moment, I never quit. I never keep out of rugby. I just keep going.
And around that time as well, when you were first playing, in 1999, Uruguay getting to their first Rugby World Cup. I'm trying to figure out how old you were. Were you maybe in your early teens around then?
I was 13 years old.
And what do you remember of that? Like, was that a huge occasion for you when you were first playing rugby to see, you know, Uruguay on the world stage?
It was great because I just started playing like 1 year ago at that time. And I remember, in Uruguay, most of the first division players, they are coaches for the underages, and all of my coaches were playing the World Cup. It was great to see them playing, and it was to be honest, after you understand me, it was an honor to me to have them coaching me, you know.
And I understand as well that one of those coaches that you mentioned was it Diego Armacheo, who was probably the greatest Uruguayan rugby player of all time, played from the 1970s up until that 1999 Rugby World Cup and scored a try in that win against Spain in their first ever World Cup game.
Yeah. One of them was Diego. And I was with Diego after when I first arrived my first year at the Premier Team, at the First Division. And when I came up from the under-19s, he was my coach. I learned a lot about him. I learned a lot with him, and he was the coach who made me prop.
And where did you play up until you played prop? What age did you move?
I was number eight.
Number eight.
Yeah, and his advice was. He told me once, listen, Mario, if you want to play international rugby, you don't have the size to be number eight. You have the size to be a tight head prop. If you start working now, you're going to arrive. And I remember 3 or 4 years later, I was leaving to France.
And so 2006 was when you played for Uruguay for the first time. How long had you been playing as a tight head prop before that?
I was playing 2 years.
Just 2 years as a tight head prop?
Yeah, and
playing international rugby. And then at what stage then did you decide? Because I was reading beforehand as well, you had been studying accountancy, and I think you made the decision to move over to France and try go professional.
Yeah, well I was 21 years old. And you know, I have been we have been with Uruguay playing a summer tournament in Romania. I think Ireland A's played the tournament. We were playing with Uruguay, and France A was playing that tournament too. And there were a lot of journalists from France, and one of them asked me after our third game if I was interested in playing in France. And I say him like, yes, of course, it's my dream. And he said me, okay, let me organize something. I want to talk about you in the newspaper, and we will see how it goes. And a month later, I received a call from US DAX that they wanted me to join the Espoir team, you know, the
academy team.
Yeah, the academy. And I didn't stop 1 second to make the decision. I said, okay, I'm leaving. Let me know when you need me there. I'm going to be there.
So that was really the move that I suppose pretty much led to everything you probably went on to do in your career, because you spent a bit of time at DAX and then you played some time in Spain. And I think it was your most significant move, and the move that you probably learned most from was after that when you you joined Massey.
Yeah. Because you know, I started in DAX. I started in the academy team, and I had my last maybe my last year. I started playing with the first division in Pro D2, but I didn't have enough time to, you know, play time. So. When I left to Spain, I used to play a lot. I played 80 minutes every game, and you know, you get that rhythm, that game rhythm, that you can you are in the game better, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a proposal from Massey to come play Pro D2, and that was a very huge step for me, because I could play more. I had more time in the team. You know, I developed better my, you know, physicality and everything. So it was a huge step from there to the time after. I started building like different stuff, different technique, and it was great. It was good.
Yeah, and I think specifically for a prop and a tight head prop, like those games in France, you know, they live and die by their scrummaging, and that must have been a fantastic place for you to really, really learn the tricks of the trade.
Oh man, you know, in Pro D2 they used to say no scrum, no win.
No scrum, no win. Yeah.
Even if you win, but your scrummaging wasn't good. You know, public crowd is not happy.
Yeah, and then so like back to Uruguay then as well, and qualifying for the World Cup in 2015. How big an occasion was that for you? Because you had been involved in the group in obviously 2006 and 7 and 2011, but you hadn't made it to a World Cup. How big a feeling was it for you to know that you were going to be able to go there for just the second time, or for the third time for Uruguay, to the biggest tournament in the world?
Oh, it was an incredible feeling. You know, I played qualifying for 2007 and 11, and we couldn't make it. So imagine how much time we had together trying to achieve the goal. And at that moment, we were like, it was our last opportunity to get it, and we could do it. It was an amazing feeling. And to be honest, this time the qualifying for this Rugby World Cup against Canada, it wasn't different, you know. For us, yeah. For us, it's very tough. You put in perspective all the sacrifices you made to achieve the goal, and after when you get it, when you can do it, it's, you know, the reward is so big that you are very happy. You know, you know it's getting into a job, getting into studies, and have the opportunity to play at that level and achieve the goal you put at the first moment. It's an amazing experience.
And I suppose as well, playing at a World Cup is one thing, but when you see the pool that you ended up playing in, and it has England, Australia, Wales, and Fiji, like three of the teams that are consistently the best in the world, and a team in Fiji as well, who everyone just loves to watch. I mean, was it, when you saw those teams come out, were you looking at it thinking, wow, this is just a dream to be able to play against these guys? Or are you thinking, oh my God, this is going to be pretty difficult?
Oh, you know, for me, and I think I'm talking in the name of my teammates too, was amazing to know that we were going to play against them, you know. We used to look at them in TV all time, you know, doing Six Nations, doing the Rugby Championship, everything. And having the opportunity to have them in front of us playing against us was amazing, you know. If you ask me if I had the opportunity to change the teams we were playing against before the World Cup, I would say no straight away.
And obviously, like, even though you lose all four games, and you know you lose pretty heavily in them as well, is there still just this incredible feeling of pride, even though you know, anytime you score a point, anytime you score a try, for you know, any of the other players on the team as well? Because I remember I've spoken to a few Tier 2 nations across this summer, and one of them in Namibia, Jacques Berger, and he was telling me about how, you know, anytime he went out playing with Namibia at the Rugby World Cup, it was always an incredible occasion for him and for his teammates, even though they knew they were probably going to lose games, because for so many guys on the team, this was their chance to showcase themselves to the world and maybe secure a better move for themselves. And ultimately, that's something that happened a few of your teammates and you as well, because shortly after the Rugby World Cup finish, Munster called.
Yeah, that's true. You know, for us, it's a way to show how rugby goes in this part of the world. I understand that maybe in Europe, you know, the Six Nations countries and everything, they don't really know how the rugby goes in this part of the world. Apart Argentina, that's a different story. That's the opportunity we have to show to the world that we are working, we understand the game, we want to play at that level, we want to be involved in that world.
And then the move to Munster specifically that I mentioned there, it was only a couple of weeks after, or a week or two after, Uruguay had finished up at that World Cup. I think you were taking a little bit of time off, and you get a phone call to say there's a team in Ireland interested in you.
Yeah, you know, I finished the World Cup, and three friends of mine, they went to Europe to watch the last two games. And after, it was supposed, I was going to be with them like 2 weeks traveling. We were going to be to Netherlands and France and have a few weeks off. And after I finished World Cup, I came back home in Paris. I took my stuff and I joined them in Netherlands. And at the second day I was there, I received a call from my agent saying me, you should be at Cork as soon as possible. I was like, what happened? Yeah, Munster is calling you. You should be there now. I was like, okay, I can't take a plane now, but tomorrow I'm taking the plane. So it was like 24 after the call, I was arriving at Cork and organizing, you know, the test I was going to have it at Munster. It was crazy.
And, like, did you think that, you know, you were ever going to get to a level where you were playing for a team as big as Munster, you know, a team that are consistently getting into the knockout stages of the Champions Cup and contesting for silverware?
To be honest, it was always my dream, but I never thought that I was going to arrive. You know, when you think playing in another teams, you say maybe okay, but when you say Monster is going to call you, for me it was a dream. You know, for me it was maybe the same. Yeah, it was the same feeling I had when I arrived to England to play the World Cup. Was exactly the same when I arrived to Cork, and they picked me up from the airport. For me, it was the same thing. It was amazing. I will never forget that feeling.
And it, like, you were only with Munster just for that season. Initially, it was a 3-month deal, and they kind of signed you up until the rest of the campaign after that. It was a season, though, that kind of proved to be quite difficult for Munster. Things didn't really go too well on the pitch. But looking back on it, you were a player that the Munster fans did quite like you. You were a bit of a cult hero for them.
Yeah. You know, I was a supporter from Munster before that. When I played for Ducks, I used to went to Biarritz to watch the Heineken Cups games and everything. But after my experience at Munster, I'm a huge fan of Munster. I watch every game. I follow all the players on Instagram. I follow what they are doing. I follow the new coaches. I follow everyone. It was an amazing experience. I love Limerick people, Cork people. I didn't have the opportunity to be around too much to know other people, but I feel the people is very warm. I was very well received in Ireland. To be honest, I was even thinking to come back to Ireland and live there. You know, it is a plan to me and my wife to come back and do our life over there.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah.
And so you left Ireland, was it 2016 when you left Ireland? Where did you go after that? Were you back to Uruguay?
No, I came back to Paris because I had all my stuff there. Because, as you say, when I first signed with Munster, I signed for 3 months. So I didn't want to make like a big move all my stuff to Ireland for only 3 months. So I just put everything into a box, you know, and I just leave France with some stuff to just leave there for 3 months. And after when they offered me to stay till the end of the season, I said, okay, if I finish the season and if I can stay here, I move everything. It didn't happen. I didn't have the opportunity to stay. So I came back to France. I packed all my stuff and come back to Uruguay.
And since then, you kept playing with Uruguay, as we mentioned, up until quite recently in qualifying for the 2019 World Cup, when you qualified last year, beating Canada across 2 games. It said a lot about how far Uruguay have probably come, because they were 2 very impressive wins against Canada to seal your place, and, you know, getting through as the second America's team rather than going through the last kind of last minute repechage tournament. Do you think that kind of showed just how far Uruguay have come down the years, that you can go up against a team like Canada and go up against these teams and, you know, and beat them consistently?
Well, that's hard to say, because as you may know, Canada and USA, they are turning into a professional rugby. Mm. You know, they are starting their own professional league. I think that they want to make the same thing here in South America with Brazil and Argentina, Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay. But I don't know if it is going to be like if it is going to have the same results as in North America.
Yeah. Are there
time will say.
Yeah. Is the Major League Rugby in America and Canada, is that an opportunity for Uruguayan rugby players to be able to get more professional chances?
Of course. Now, I think for last season, four or five Uruguayan players went to Canada and USA, and I think that open door will give to Uruguayan rugby another tools, you know. So it could be good for us too, but we will see, because it happens in every country, you know. They have restricted places for foreign players,
yeah.
And they want to develop their rugby. So I don't know how it is going to work with the Uruguayan players. But for the beginnings, some of the players were there, they were playing, and they did it really good. So I think they are coming back after World Cup.
For kids and for schools and things like that, is rugby becoming a more popular sport for them?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. They are, you know, when Uruguay plays here, you know, I'm talking qualifying games or test matches, they is full of, you know, school kids and little kids that they are not used to watch rugby or play rugby. People is getting more interested about the sport. And even when I'm working, for example, I have a meeting or whatever, and I go somewhere, and some of the people recognize me and ask me, like, hey, let me know about rugby. My kid is, I don't know, my kid is 10 years old. You think he could play? Where can I get him to start playing? And everything is like, people is getting to know that. And not here on TV, for example, in the news, before, the only sports you used to watch was soccer. Now they talk about rugby. They take five minutes to show some images, and it's getting popular.
And of the current team that are going to Japan next month, what are we expecting to see from them? You know, who are they? Who are the players we should be looking out for? What style of rugby do Uruguay play?
Oh, well, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for us. Every World Cup is tough for Uruguay, but this one is going to be tougher, I think, because having Georgia and Fiji, they both need to win to qualify straight away from next World Cup. So I think it's going to be a big challenge for us. And talking about the team, you know, players to watch. Number one, Matteo Sanguinetti. He's a young prop. He played in USA last season. He's a soldier, good worker. And as you may see, last World Cup, number 9 and number 10, Agustín Ormachea and Felipe Berchesi. They are good players. They are friends from since they are like 6 years old, and I think they are both of them. They are good players to watch. You know, you should keep an eye on them.
I've been told a lot as well about Santiago Arata.
Santiago Arata, yes, number 9. He's very
very quick,
very young, quick, very quick, very young, and those. Intelligent players, you know, they are good, really good players, really good players. Arata, he's very young. I think he's going to play a lot of minutes during World Cup. And it could be a really good opportunity to him to show to the world what, you know, how he plays.
Okay, Mario, we'll look forward to watching Uruguay next month there. Of course, they're going to be going up against Wales, Australia, Fiji and Georgia. Another really difficult pool for them this time round. Mario Sagario, thanks a million for joining us on Land of the Rising Scrum.
Thank you very much. And let me say let me say a big hug to all the people in Ireland, and especially Cork and Limerick. I hope to be there soon and have a little pint with the lads.
We'll put that down. We'll make sure to give him a shout out for that. Mario, thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers, bye-bye.
So that was Mario Sagaru here on Land of the Rising Scrum. Just a reminder, our rugby coverage and Off the Ball is brought to you by Vodafone. Team of us, everyone in. You can listen back to this podcast or any of our other episodes on offtheball.com, and you can also hear us on the Go Loud app, as well as if you want to tune in and watch this back on youtube.com/offtheball. Three more episodes to come. Well, maybe two. We might cram in two countries into one. Argentina, Georgia and Australia still to go here in Land of the Rising Scrum before we kick it all off in Japan. So we'll speak to you again next week.
The Land of the Rising Scrum on Off the Ball.